This is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Good afternoon. How much money Alaska's public schools will get from the state is up in the air. That's after lawmakers fell one vote short of overriding Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of a funding boost and a reform package. So what's next? To learn more, Alaska News Nightly host Wesley Early spoke with Alaska Public Media state government reporter Eric Stone.
So I know Governor Dunleavy said he's ready to move on to addressing energy issues. So are lawmakers throwing up their hands and moving on?
Well, not yet. They are moving some energy proposals, but Republican House Speaker Kathy Tilton says they're able to walk and chew gum at the same time, so to speak. She says there are about two dozen education bills pending, and one that's drawing some attention is called House Bill 392. It's backed by House Resources Chair Rep. Tom McKay from Anchorage. He's a Republican who voted against the override.
Our decision was to offer an alternative, to offer an option, so that when folks came in to vote on the veto override, They could have some comfort to know that there's another education spending bill, a policy bill in the Education Committee, HB 392, that they could look to solve the problem of needing more policy in the bill and maintaining a high BSA.
And I got to tell you, I'm a little puzzled by this bill. It's almost exactly the same bill as the one that Dunleavy vetoed, plus the governor's plan for teacher bonuses of $5,000 to $15,000 per year. Tilton also spotlighted a bill in the House Education Committee that would allow the State Board of Education, appointed by the governor, to directly authorize new charter schools. Now, those two items, state-authorized charter schools and teacher bonuses, are what the governor called on lawmakers to pass when he issued his veto threat. It puts them on a collision course with the Senate.
And where is the Senate on all of this?
Well, it's safe to say that the senators who voted to override the veto are not happy. Senator Jesse Bjorkman, a Nikiski Republican, says funding outside the formula, the one-time funding that's been common in recent years, is inefficient. Basically, he's saying that if you give one-time money, schools are going to spend it on one-time things. Computers, TVs, that kind of thing. Not more teachers and aides to reduce class sizes and, you know, make teaching more effective. Basically, you don't have to pay a TV a salary every year, so it makes sense to buy it with one-time money. Senate President Gary Stevens, he's a Kodiak Republican. He says the supermajority made up of all but three senators is still committed to finding some way forward. But he's saying, more or less, you break it, you fix it.
20 majority legislators in the House were able to kill overriding of the governor's veto. That's only one-third of the legislature. The onus is now on them, I believe, on the House to send us meaningful legislation.
But the Senate's lead negotiator, that's Senator Bill Wilkowski, an Anchorage Democrat, he's saying there's not much room left for compromise, especially on the charter school issue.
So why do they say there may not be room for compromise? What are the major sticking points?
Well, basically, they're saying they've given a lot already. So the bill that passed the House and Senate but was vetoed, that would have created a new dedicated position within the Education Department to help parents and districts create new charter schools and a new appeals process for charters that get shut down. And Wilkowski said he offered more concessions during negotiations over the veto, basically shortening the time it takes to get a new charter school approved. He called it a compromise to the compromise to the compromise. But he says the governor's proposal could allow a school district to be forced to fund and operate a charter school it doesn't approve of. And for Wilkowski and for most of the Senate, that's non-negotiable.
The line was state charter schools. The line was the state doing that, perhaps against the local community's wishes. And that was a line that many people just couldn't cross.
As for the bonus proposal, he said the $60 million a year program would be an expensive experiment that hasn't really been tested.
Okay, so if both the Senate and the governor see those as red lines, that's not great news for people who want to see a long-term funding boost for schools.
Now, not everyone in the Senate thinks those are necessarily red lines. Senator Shelley Hughes is a Palmer Republican who's one of only three senators not in the majority caucus, and she's skeptical of the claim that allowing the state to authorize charter schools would put the state and local districts at odds. But even so, she suggests giving universities or local governments the power to charter new schools. That could be a compromise. And on the teacher bonuses, Hughes says there's room for compromise there, too.
So I think there are different ways to structure that teacher incentive payment. I think the governor's three-year plan, I personally don't agree with that. I think it should be spread out over more years.
So instead of offering bonuses in years 1, 2, and 3, maybe years 2, 4, and 6, or 3, 6, and 9, and maybe tying it to signing new contracts for the following year to make sure people don't just take the money and run. But the way things are going, it's not clear to me that we'll get any sort of new compromise anytime soon.
That was Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone speaking with Alaska News Nightly host Wesley Early. And a regional working group in Southeast Alaska wants to create a landslide warning system, a tool that will monitor the region's hazardous weather and warn residents of potential risks. Sitka already has a system, but as Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the new working group is brainstorming ways to serve even Southeast smaller communities.
11 people have died in Southeast landslides since 2015, 3 in Sitka, 2 in Haines, and 6 in Wrangell. And there is reason to believe that that number could grow.
I think we can all imagine that landslides could increase.
Eric Bilderback manages several landslide hazard scientific projects for the U.S. Geological Survey. He says climate change is impacting the weather, and then the weather is impacting the landscape.
We don't know for sure whether that landscape response is going to lead to specifically more landslides or more frequent landslides or different types of landslides. We just know that there is going to be a change in Southeast.
Lisa Bush saw this coming. She runs the Sitka Sound Science Center, and she helped win millions of dollars in grant funding to set up a warning system in Sitka after the deadly 2015 landslide. Now she's working with half a dozen communities in the region to get one of their own through a project called KUTI, which means weather and think it. It's much needed, she says, but the funding is not sustainable.
We're seeing the environment change. Why should we have to compete for grants to stay safe or to help our communities stay safe?
The Science Center is spearheading a regional landslide working group, bringing in tribes and local governments from all over Southeast, along with state and federal agency experts like Bilderback. They held their first meeting in early March in Sitka. Bush says time is of the essence. Climate change is happening now.
And we know we probably can't stop that, but hopefully we could stop future human tragedies. So if you had a warning, you know, you could evacuate your home. That's the idea.
Southeast Alaska is mostly steep slopes covered in trees. It's also a temperate rainforest, with some communities seeing over 100 inches of precipitation a year. The region's recent landslides are caused by a lot of rain in a short amount of time. The number of slides is staggering. Last fall, there were dozens region-wide, and several roads were cut off on Prince of Wales Island, near Metlakatla in southern Southeast, and near Hoona in the north.
It's not just the community that we're concerned about landslides. We have a huge road network.
Jeremy Grant is with the Hoona Indian Association and a member of the working group. He says his diet, like others in Hoona, is 70% subsistence foods, and past landslides have cut off some important roads that lead to subsistence areas.
For hunting, gathering, you name it. Like that essentially is, you know, that is my religion out there, so that's my access to everything.
Grant says the group, by pooling their resources and knowledge, could help Southeast residents become better prepared.
This is such a growing concern because the weather seems to be getting worse and worse, and these events are becoming more and more frequent, especially with all the tragedies happening. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Sitka's tribe has been through the process already. Working with the Sitka Sound Science Center, the tribe spent 3 years collaborating on the local warning system. Tammy Young works in the Resource Protection Department. She says the tribe spent months meeting with in-town organizations like the school district to see what would work locally. What's the best way to forecast risks? What's the best way to communicate with residents, especially those living off the grid or who are housing insecure?
You know, it's a concern if a person doesn't have a way to communicate back and forth. We might think that everybody has cell phones in this day and age, but that's not true. In smaller villages, where it is actually much more probable that there are landslides, not everybody has a smartphone.
In Sitka, they created an online app and pushed the information out through many avenues, including on utility bills. Identifying the unique circumstances of individual communities is a working group priority. Advances in technology have made monitoring landslides easier. The infrastructure supporting the equipment, everything from solar power to batteries to cell phone service, has gotten better and cheaper. But installation and maintenance will still take money and a bit of stamina, says Bilderback, the USGS scientist. The region needs weather and soil monitoring equipment set up on the hill slopes.
It can't just be down at the airport. Southeast, it's so big, and locating equipment at elevation, it's going to require support.
Support in a sustainable way. That's the idea behind the regional landslide project. building something similar to other government-funded programs like monitoring for volcanoes or tsunamis. If it works in Southeast Alaska, perhaps it could work in other areas of the country, which are also seeing more landslides. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.